I'd like to look a little bit at prophecy today. I guess the title of this would be Prophecy. Don't let it keep you from losing focus. Sometimes it seems as though the church has tended, or people in the church have had agendas where they put prophecy ahead of everything and they want to be the one that knows this or that. But just let's say, what is our purpose? Prophecy is a very important part of the Bible, of course. We have to know what's coming, but is that our commission? Our commission is not to know prophecy. Our commission is, as we know, to preach the gospel. I'd like you to turn to Revelation 11, if you will. Revelation 11 and verse 3. Just going to read this one verse. We all know this. Verse 3 says, "And I will grant authority to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy for 1260 days clothed in sackcloth. And we've always understood this as two people that will come at the end time, that will perform many miracles. I Googled just two witnesses, and I found 18,900,000 articles related to the two witnesses. So I went ahead and Googled again, and Google is an official word by Webster. It is also a verb now, so I guess I can actually do that. But I Googled, the two witnesses are here, and there are 15,900,000 sites for that. So I started looking around at people claiming to be the two witnesses. And after about 500 who claimed to either be one or both of the witnesses, I quit counting. It was just ridiculous, some of the ideas that they had. Remember Mr. Keller's telling once out at Pasadena that three men came in once, and there were always, I guess, these kooks that would come in and claim they're the prophet or the witnesses. But three men came in, and they were the two witnesses. Not sure how that works. But we've always had a little bit of a problem in that area, haven't we? I think some of the beliefs in the church, some people that tend to want to just have knowledge that others don't, I think it's drawn a few of those people, and they're not really there for the right reasons. They just like to think that they know a little bit of prophecy that others don't. But in the churches of God right now, and I think we all agree in this room anyway, that United Church of God doesn't have all of God's people. I think that's ludicrous to even claim that now. I think we all recognize that there are people in all the different churches that have that. But we do have some that are in the Church of God with the same belief system that we have that you wonder, what are you thinking? You know, there's a man that claimed May 27th, 2012 was the last day Christ was going to return on that day. He had started that in 2008. He's actually a former minister in the United Church of God and worldwide. Well, May 27th, 2012, I went on his website that day, and the day before he had proclaimed, "This is the last sermon, you're not going to hear from me, Christ is here, and we're not going to worry about it." Well, the next day, it was all a metaphor, and he was made to understand that day, that it was not a real thing, it was something that was spiritual. And he was just revealed that the day that didn't happen, so it makes you wonder. And by the way, he is now, he is to report February 1st to the federal prison system for tax evasion. So I wonder where his priorities are. You know, I don't know if he didn't understand. Did Satan get a hold of him, or were there ulterior motives from the beginning? Yeah, it's a little scary to see that. It makes all of the churches look bad when we all have the same beliefs. We're all trying to follow the same way. And then we have people that happen like that. Now, there's one man, and he's leader of another church. And he says he's not one of the two witnesses. However, he's the only apostle on the earth. So that he's training the two men, and they answer to him. Interesting. That the leader of the church was always Christ, but some people, I just don't understand that. There's also a website focused on prophecy. It's by a man, I think Jason Maureen know him fairly well, but he focuses on prophecy, and he's attended for years. I've looked at his website. It's very interesting. It gives a lot of historical stuff that's going on in Europe. some of the droughts and things happening around the world. But he started having a riff with his home office, headquarters, if you will, because they wouldn't officially recognize him as a prophet. And his beef was somebody gave him an anointing and he had a double portion of God's Spirit, which made him a prophet. And a prophet's above an evangelist, so he should be the head of the church. And when they didn't recognize that, well, he went off and split off on his own. What's wrong with people? Where are we that we don't realize that God doesn't want us fighting about who's going to be in charge? What does he want us to do? But I'd like to look at some of the end time prophecies right now. If you could look at Matthew 24. I'm not bashing other churches. That's not my intent at all. I think there are sincere people in every church. I think our church, United here, has as many problems as other churches. We just, as long as we have human nature in the middle, we're going to have problems, aren't we? But Matthew 24, I'd like to start in verse 4. We'll go verses 4 through 11 for right now. And Jesus answered and said to them, "See to it that no one misleads you. For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will mislead many. You will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not frightened, for those things must take place, but that is not yet the end. Verse 7, for nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and in various places there will be famines and earthquakes. But all these things are merely the beginning of birth pangs. Then they will deliver you to tribulation, and will kill you, and you will be hated by all nations because of my name. And at that time, many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another." Verse 11, many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. Are we truly facing times like this right now? It says that these are the worst times ever in the history of man before the end time. If you look at the average household, and even worldwide right now, it's in better shape. The economy of the world is actually in better shape than it has been for many years. I didn't know that, and I didn't believe that, but we've had a few problems here. But as far as food and shelter, which are the primary when you break, okay, you don't have money, that's not important. But if you have food and shelter, that's what matters. This world is in better shape than it has been. But this hasn't always been the case, has it? We've got it better than any time in history of the world. This flu season, it's been rough. It's been really bad. But does it reach the bubonic plagues of Europe? 60% of the people in Europe died. I just had two classes on this at the same time, and it was unbelievable. They would go for hundreds of miles, the military, and find complete villages just wiped out completely, just bones, and you would have animals eating on bones. That's all that it was. You know, what we have now, that doesn't compare to that. When you talk about warfare at the end time, these war countries in Europe, as they were developing nation states, they were constantly at war. They were fighting all of the time to establish even these serfdoms, these regional kings, as you will, if you will. They were establishing who's in power, and they were wiping out cities. These people at this time, I'm sure they had no doubt, as they were very biblically knowledgeable. They thought that was the end time. There hasn't been any generation, I don't think, that says that this is the end time. I think every generation throughout time has said this has to be it. But if the end time is worse than any time that's ever been, we have to understand where we are. You know, how can someone sit here and say from 2008 to 2012, these are the worst times ever in history, and say the world's coming back? I'd like you to turn to Deuteronomy 28, if you will. Deuteronomy 28, Deuteronomy 28, we're going to read verses 53 through 57. Very hard to read. They're not pleasant at all, but these are some of the woes that God warned Israel for. Verse 53. Let's go to verse 52, then I'll explain that in a minute. It shall besiege you in all your towns until your high and fortified walls in which you trusted come down throughout your land. And it shall besiege you in all your towns throughout your land which the Lord your God has given you. Verse 53 through 57, I apologize, but this is in the Bible. It says, then you shall eat the offspring of your own body, the flesh of your sons and of your daughters, whom the Lord your God has given you during the siege and the distress by which your enemy will oppress you. The man who is refined and very delicate among you shall be hostile toward his brother and toward his wife he cherishes and toward the rest of his children who remain, so that he will not give even one of them any of the flesh of his children, which he will eat, since he has nothing else left during the siege and the distress by which your enemy will oppress you in all your towns. The refined and delicate woman among you who would not venture to let the sole of her foot on the ground for delicateness and refinedness shall be hostile toward her husband she cherishes and toward her son and daughter and toward her afterbirth, which issues from between her legs, and toward her children whom she bears. For she will eat them secretly for lack of anything else during the siege and the distress by which your enemy will oppress you in your towns. Now, how can we say, okay, gas has hit $4 a gallon. This has to be the end time. How does that compare to this? And believe it or not, this was a woe in the Bible about if Israel did not keep the commandments. But this happened a lot during the Roman Empire when they would seize cities. They would lay siege. They would force them into starvation. People would actually eat, forgive me for this, their own excrement. They would do anything to survive. It was cannibalism the whole time. And the end time is supposed to be the worst time ever. I remember when I was small, Mr. Cowan, it's the first sermon I ever remember. I was probably 5 or 6. I didn't understand anything. I thought the Bible, okay, you went to church, everyone's good, you get to the kingdom. I did understand that. But then all of a sudden, Mr. Cowan came in and gave a sermon once about how terrible it was going to be at the end time. And I thanked him a few years ago for, I had to tell him I didn't sleep for like 4 nights after he gave that sermon. But it was one I definitely remember. You know, this is supposed to be, the end time is supposed to be worse than what this is, or at least prophesied like this. This is going to be brutal, horrible times. We're going to see this. We're going to experience that if we don't get to the place of safety. But we're still going to see this building up as we do. People saying, oh, this is the end time right now. It's ridiculous. Worldwide Church of God, now I looked at the Grace Communion website of what they believe on the two witnesses. And the two witnesses, they kind of hem-hawed around, but they speculated that the two witnesses were the Old and New Testament. That's what the two witnesses are. They aren't actually people. It's just a metaphor for the Old and New Testament are the two witnesses. So they've come a long ways from when we went to church there, didn't we? You know, we really can't relate to the Middle Ages. I know we can't relate to a town being sieged. We can't relate to the stuff, cannibalism that would go on there. But we can look at something, and I'm trying to think, Mom, Mr. Perryman, I guess. There are a few people here that were children during this time, but I'd love to look at the Great Depression time. At least a few people can relate to that. That's here in the United States, what was going on. 1934. This is, 1929 was the start of the Great Depression, so it was midway through. No matter what people tend to think, no government programs brought us out of the Great Depression. World War II brought us out. The amount of work that was involved in warfare, it's sad to say, but that did bring us out of it. 1934, unemployment. It dropped 2%. It was only 21.7%, down from 23.8%, I think it was. And now we think it's catastrophic if we have 10% unemployment today. That was just one aspect. The stock market had crashed in 1929. Many people that were millionaires were now, they owed millions because they bought on margin, which go into banking terms, you borrow money basically to for these stocks to go up, and when they drop, you owe the difference. People committed suicides left and right during this time. But the Dust Bowl in the Midwest hit at the same time, very same time, obliterated all of the land out there. People had tilled up land that really did not need to be tilled up. When droughts hit, when there were no rains, and the winds that are brutal out there, and people that have lived out there certainly know that, just swept up the topsoil. 6 inches, and I don't remember the day, but I think it was 1934, maybe 33. 6 inches of dust was dropped on New York City and Washington, D.C. from Oklahoma and Texas. It traveled all of that way. There were 4 or 5 ships that were actually sunk traveling from New York to London because this came over. They got lost, and they ended up on reefs, and they sunk. They traveled thousands of miles of Dust Bowl. The government, again, had thrown billions of dollars into programs that were not working at the time. What do you think if you were someone that read the Bible every day at that time, 1934, when you said this is the end time? There's no doubt. You know, people are dying. Children were literally starving to death. Cities, towns. Oklahoma and Texas, it was even worse. They couldn't grow crops even though they had land. There was just nothing to grow them on. There was no rain. You know, people were starving everywhere. There was no doubt that to these people that this was the end time. I want to read something written in 1934. Starts with a biblical verse. It says, following this, Jesus said, then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. Now, this is Revelation, as we all know. Combining the many, many other prophecies of this great tribulation, describing its every phase and cause, including unemployment, millionaire suicides, hoarded gold and money withdrawn from circulation, general lawlessness, lukewarm and formal churches, etc., we may be absolutely certain that we are in and for about 3 years have been passing through this great worldwide tribulation. Anybody know where that came from? February 1934, the plain truth. Mr. Armstrong wrote that. Not bashing Mr. Armstrong by any stretch. God used him. But when men tend to put dates on stuff, did David mess up? David committed one of the worst sins we can think of, killing a man and taking his wife, sleeping with her. He counted the people and God told him not to. No, people make mistakes. It's when they put their own personal ideas in trying to interpret God's way in that sense. Would have been better to have just said this could be. There is no doubt that we're in the last times. You know, no one knows the end time. Even Christ said he didn't know it. But I'd like you to turn to, where am I? Okay, Matthew 24, verse 36. And this is where people do get off when we take our own ideas and put those into that. Matthew 24 and verse 36. But of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. We shouldn't try to interpret things. We can look at prophecy. It's good to understand, and it does say keep an eye on things. But let's not put ideas, oh, this must be this way. You read tons of people on the internet, I had a vision about this and that, and some of these things are so off the wall that it's unbelievable. But just, we have a commission, we have duty from God. Prophecy, yes, prophecy is very good. It's good to know that, but we don't need to dwell on it. We have had people in the past. I remember a few guys that are my age that came into church and worldwide way back, and their only reason for being there because they liked the prophecy. and they liked the idea that they knew something that other people didn't know when it came to actually keeping holy days, stuff like that. They had no interest in that. It was just they wanted something new. Well, people like that don't get it. They didn't get it. And maybe that's the reason that we did lose a lot of people. They were never there. They never understood the real reasons. So the rest of the sermon, I just want to look at Matthew 24 and look at the verses from 12 to 14, right after the verses we read from 4 through 11. Let's start in verse 12. We'll just read it first. And verse 12 says, "Because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold." Have we seen God's love that much in the churches? We didn't see it when we had our own split a while back from both sides. We were sniping at one another. That's ridiculous. We've seen churches, we're the only true ones. I don't want to be one that has to answer to God because I said, hey, we're the only ones that get there. Like I said before, I believe most of us believe that there are the elect in every church. It's not just here. We may have a small amount. This group may have a small amount. But I know there are people in every group that put me to shame as far as studying, praying, knowing the Bible. Not going to sit here and judge someone lest I be judged harsher. Is that not what it says? I need to turn for this verse to 1 Corinthians 13. We all know this as the love chapter. But 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 1. It says, "If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I have become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all mystery and all knowledge, and if I have all faith as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. Love is patient, love is kind, and love is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. Does not act unbecomingly, it does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account a wrong suffered. Does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails, but if there are gifts of prophecy, they will be done away. If there are tongues, they will cease. If there is knowledge, it will be done away." Let's go down to verse 14, or 13, I'm sorry. "But now faith, hope, love abide these three, but the greatest of these is love." It's funny with prophecy, also another gift is tongues. And I guess as we understand it, tongues are simply being able to understand different languages. You have a gift for that. I have one more class of Spanish, and I certainly now know that I have absolutely no gift for tongues, if you will, of any kind. Get through it and survive, and I'll be happy. But it's funny that you never see a lot of people that tend to promote this. Oh, I have a gift for tongues. It's always the prophecy. It's kind of like I know more than other people about the future. And I don't know. To me, that's just very strange that the gift of God, one, is just that much more important. It's just almost like people put the thought of, I can do this or I know that, above everything else. You know, love is not, as it says, love is not bashing another group. It's not saying we're the only ones, claiming that we do things perfectly. We have these restored truths that we have and no one else has. If anyone did it perfectly, why would Christ need to come back? Why did he come in the first place? Well, he came because no person could do it perfectly. He proved he could do it, and man's not capable. And yet we have people today saying, we're the ones that do it just right. We're the only ones. Is this the love that 1 Corinthians is talking about? I don't think so. Let's go back to Matthew 24, verse 13. Matthew 24 and verse 13. It says, but the one who endures to the end, he will be saved. Endure to the end means never quitting. The last sermonette, or maybe it was two sermonettes ago, I gave about people not quitting. And I've always related to Paul's teachings about this because he talks about racing, boxing and stuff, just because I played sports my whole life. It's the reason right now I can't walk up the steps at home. Played volleyball the other night and jumped that high because at Winter Family Weekend, I don't know if I blew my knees out or what, but time to grow up. And I can't give that away. But I guess that's why I relate to Paul's teachings on this. So if you will, turn to 2 Corinthians 11. Talks about enduring to the end. 2 Corinthians 11, we're going to read 10 verses here, verse 23 through 33. Ask you right now, did Paul endure to the end? And I saw a documentary about Paul. He said, why was he driven so much? And you take it for what it's worth, but a couple of biblical historians said that probably because he felt the guilt that he persecuted, even had people killed for the truth, that he was extremely driven to endure whatever because of the guilt that he felt. Again, take it for what it's worth, but it is worth thinking about. Verse 23. Are they servants of Christ? I speak as if insane. I more so, in far more labors, in far more imprisonments, beaten times without number, often in danger of death. 5 times I received from the Jews 39 lashes. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have spent in the deep. I have been on frequent journeys in dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers on the sea, dangers among false brethren. I have been in labor and hardship through many sleepless nights, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. Apart from such external things, there is a daily pressure on me of concern for all the churches. Who is weak without my being weak? Who is led into sin without my intense concern? If I have to boast, I will boast of what pertains to my weakness. The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, who is blessed forever, knows that I am not lying. In Damascus, the ethnarch under Aretes the king was guarding the city of the Damascenes in order to seize me, and I was let down in a basket through a window in the wall, and so escaped his hands. Paul definitely knew what it was like to endure to the end. You don't have to turn there. I'll turn to something that Paul stated that proves that, yes, he did until the very end. And it's 2 Timothy 4, verses 7 through 8. Again, no reason to turn there. I will just read it. And this talks about the enduring to the end. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. In the future, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. So we have love that he talks about, Matthew 24, and then he talks about enduring to the end. Should that not be our focus? At least those two. We have one more. Rather than worrying about, oh, this day, this such and such is going to happen. Charleston, were you in, 1975? Was it that there was a lot of speculation that that was the end time at one time among a lot of people?
1972 was kind of the beginning.
Because reading some of this stuff, they were saying, oh, these are the end times in 1970. And you had the counterculture. You had a lot of riots everywhere. The Vietnam War was still continuing. So at that time, they believed it was the end. But shouldn't we be focused more on this than we're going to see the two witnesses? It's obvious. Probably when we first see them, believe it or not, I think we're going to be skeptical because supposedly a lot of false prophets are going to be everywhere. But I think it's going to be pretty clear after a while. They're going to stand out and they're going to be against you know, the governments that will be established, and it will be obvious. We may not see it at the very beginning, but I think it will become clear as we do. So we need to keep an eye on things like that. I did see some guy talking about the two witnesses that stated that he had no doubt they were going to have this tremendous PR firm. He told what websites they would use because they were much faster and much bigger. This was what the two witnesses were going to be, and everyone would use that to find out worldwide. They could link worldwide, and everyone would watch them from the very beginning. They would be clear from day one. I don't know if that's necessarily true. So you get all kinds out there. But let's go to Matthew 24 and verse 14. This is the third verse. One more commission that Christ gave for his people at the end time. Matthew 24 and verse 14. This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. Isn't this the mission statement of all of the churches of God? I remember looking at several of them, and they all had this same thing. Matthew 28, verses 19 and 20. I'll just read it here. But this is one of the commissions that all the churches believe. It says, "Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost. Lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world." Sorry, but my copier missed a sentence there. But we do know what that commission is. That's what all of the churches believe. That's what we should be focused on. Getting that. We need to learn the love. We need to endure to the end. We've got to fight all the way through. We're going to have hiccups, of course, but we need to stay focused and fight. Like Paul said, I fought the good fight. It's over. I made it. So to conclude, prophecy is very important. It's an important part of the Bible. It's a third of the Bible is prophecy. But we can't allow that to steer us away from what our objectives and what our goal and what our commission from God is. You know, how many become disillusioned in 1972, 1975 when none of that happened? We need to stay away from speculating on this date can happen, this should happen. Yes, keep up with current events, know what's going to happen, but we don't need to be setting dates. I wouldn't want to be the one that has to answer because several people left when it didn't happen in 1975 when we said it did. You can read online. There are a lot of people that left around that time. Now, when you continue to read some of their letters, you understand that they had other issues, but that was, you know, that was one issue that they had was they felt they were lied to. They were told something that was false. You know, people proclaim everything, but what it comes down to is we need to do what God asks us to. Who in the world would want to be that prophet or one of the two witnesses? I bet I could outrun Jonah if I was told I was going to be one of the two witnesses, because I don't want that. Sorry, that does not sound like that's going to be a walk in the park. But I'd like to turn to one final verse, and it's 1 Corinthians 7. And I come to this verse a lot. It seems strange just because of the first part of the verse, but it tells you what matters. And it's 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 19. It says, "Circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing." And it's the second part of the verse. But what matters is the keeping of the commandments of God. We could speculate all we want. We can make dates if we'd like. We can worry about little things that really don't matter. But the second half of this verse, that is what matters. What matters is the keeping of the commandments of God. you know, we have a job to do. The end time may be approaching. It may be here and it's just not seen yet. But we don't know. I think it's going to get a lot worse. I think we can't imagine how bad it's going to be at the end time. I think we've been too spoiled in this country to even be able to picture what it's going to be like. But let's not get sidetracked about, oh, the end time's coming. Okay, it's coming. We have a job to do. We need to get our house in order. We need to, you know, preach the gospel as it says. We need to show that love. You know, God says there's never going to be times like that. And I don't see that right now. You know, the two witnesses and false prophets will be seeing those miracles. That will be a time that, hey, something's going on. We've seen wars and rumors of wars for as long as I can remember. There's constant. But we need to watch closely, but we do need to focus on what is important.